You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Hello and welcome to Real Living. This is Lavinia Spirito in the studio here with my good friend Mary Lou Nemecek. And we are continuing, maybe this might be the last installment of telling you about our trip to the Holy Land, to Israel and to Jordan, to certain parts of Jordan, that we took in November with Catholic Way Bible Study. A good time was had by all. There were a few mishaps, but it's funny how, you know,
it all came together.
You don't get preserved from the mishaps, but you certainly find your way through it, through the mishaps.
Exactly.
Don't you, you know?
Exactly. We may have come back a little bruised, but better for it.
But I mean, you know, try and take a trip anyway. I've gotten to where I get on a plane and I immediately get sick.
Yes.
It's like,
yes,
no matter where I go, no matter what I do, you know.
Right.
But that's not what we're talking about today. Today we are talking about the tail end of our trip where we decided to go to see ancient Moab, M-O-A-B. And if you've read Genesis, you know, and if you know, if you read the Torah, if you read the book of Ruth, for instance, Ruth was a Moabitess. She was from Moab. Moab is just the southern portion of what today is the state of Jordan. And so what we did is we crossed at the Allenby Bridge, and which is below or right by the Dead Sea, and went into Jordan. It's funny how, you know, how close everything is, especially having been on the Jordan River. We told you about how we, on one bank, it was Israel. On the other bank, which was like 40 feet away, maybe 60 feet away, was Jordan.
Oh, it wasn't far
at
all.
Close.
We could have just walked across.
Very close. So what we did is we did three separate places. We went to the Mariba Valley, which was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I thought the Mariba Valley with that mosaic of the map of the first century Israel, I think we're going to talk about. And then we went to Mount Nebo, the mountain, of course, where Moses surveyed the Holy Land. And finally, we ended up in Petra. So there's a lot to talk about, but I really recommend if you all can do it. And there's really no problems with, you have to get a separate visa, but it's not a big deal. We did it in a bus, you know, going back and forth from Jordan,
but
from
just
Israel
entering
to Jordan.
From Israel to Jordan was, you know, there's a procedure that you have to go through, and we couldn't use our bus. We had to get a new bus, new driver, new guide.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, very strange. I mean, you were definitely leaving one country, entering another one.
Mm-hmm.
And what was unusual is when we were in Jordan, they wanted us to have a policeman on board, remember?
Which we did, yeah.
Which we did, to protect us, which—
And he didn't look like, I think I would have done a better job of protecting him.
He was so young.
He was a little scrawny, too, you know? I mean, really, what are you going to protect us from, you know?
But that's what they do. It was kind of interesting. I was, you know, it wasn't a bothersome at all, but, you know, that's just what they do.
I thought our guide was very good.
Yes, he was.
He introduced himself as James. You know, they do introduce themselves with these names, but you know that his name is not James. His name is something else, but incredibly well-spoken. He had been in the States for college, I think. I mean, you know, he was just very colloquial. And he did a fantastic job. It's funny how, the good guides, after a while, they just develop this rapport with the people that they're guiding. And the love that they have for the places, or the interest that they have for the places that they're describing, just comes through.
Right. And there seems to be, as you mentioned, a connection with America, because both of our guides have been to America, have studied over here.
And have close ties.
So they have, you know, they know what we're about.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Which is funny, because you'd have them beginning to intone about, now we're going to leave some time for shopping. I'm like, how did you learn how to do that? Well, you must have had several groups, you know. So what we did is we went to Mariba, and we went to first the Basilica of St. George. And on the floor, that was one of the things that just, I actually got a poster of that because I thought it was so phenomenal. And it's a mosaic of the 6th century Holy Land. Now, this picture here, this Mariba map that you have here, has obviously been touched up and colorized. But it's truly amazing. Y'all, if you all want to go see it, y'all should Google Mariba, M-A-D-A-B-A, mosaics. And the floor of the Church of St. George will show up.
But you have to appreciate that you didn't have maps floating around in those days. So to have something put on the floor in tile that remains, and I thought it was even, I thought it might have been a little bit earlier than the 6th century.
It's just amazing
because there are parts of it that you can see that are connected, and you're walking on the floor, mm-hmm. and they have these mats, so you're not walking mm-hmm. in the places that have the mosaics. And it's incredible because of the size of it,
mm-hmm.
The authenticity of it.
It's as big as the floors of the church.
Right.
And what it is, it's a map of Israel, but it's all the way up to Lebanon, Syria, and all the way down to Egypt.
It shows Gaza.
It shows the width of Israel and, of course, present-day Jordan as well. And very clearly you see depicted the Sea of Galilee with the Jordan running from the Sea of Galilee into the Dead Sea, down to the detail of the little fish going into the Dead Sea with mm-hmm. unhappy faces and coming back from the Dead Sea up to the sweet waters of the Lake of Galilee with little happy faces. It's
right.
the cutest little thing. So I would really recommend you all doing that. Now, what are things depicted on this map? Well, you know, a lot of it has been, well, not a lot, but certain portions have been defaced. Remember also that this map is 6th century. In the 8th century, there was a famous heresy called the iconoclastic heresy that came out of the East, the Empire of the East, Byzantium, Constantinople, etc. And it was influenced directly by the newly formed faith of Islam, which said that there should not be in art any human representations or nothing that really depicts God or anybody close to God. So what happened? They defaced all the various mosaics, all the various styles. Everybody they could find, they erased the heads. They erased the likenesses of the people there. So it's interesting to see. You actually can see here on this map, there's a few places where the heads for instance, there's people in a boat that I'm seeing right here, and their little faces were defaced. They were, you know, erased because as a result of this iconoclastic heresy, which eventually was resolved. But what happened was that the first 6 centuries worth of art, of religious art in the East especially, which was the one closest in eyewitness to what our Lord really probably looked like and was transmitting that likeness, got destroyed. One of the few items that remain is the face of Jesus Pantocrator in the monastery of St. Catherine on Mount Sinai. That's one of the only really remaining extant images of the Lord from before the iconoclastic heresy that destroyed everything in the 7th and 8th centuries. This map, you can see the Dead Sea. You can see people on boats on the sea. You can see hot baths. You can see Jericho. You can see the mountains of Moab. You can see Jerusalem. It goes all the way up to Nablus, so all the way really to Lebanon, Syria. It's truly amazing. It's got Greek inscriptions that kind of labels everything. It's got little cities. It's beautiful. The colors are just gorgeous, right?
It is gorgeous to see. And aside from this, the only other thing that was existing was something in the 4th century, which were some plates, the Pettinger plates, which are in Vienna, which was a road map of the Roman Byzantine Empire. Mm-hmm. So aside from this, this is why this is so valued, because it shows you in detail all of these other cities and so forth, and the writings on it are in Greek. Mm-hmm. And when they refer to Jerusalem, they call it the Holy City of Jerusalem. I mean, this is a Christian mm-hmm. map. Mm-hmm. It's a salvation history map showing all the different areas. And on here, it's the picture of Jerusalem is the most impressive. It's larger than any other city. Mm-hmm. So you can tell they were giving the importance to the Holy
City.
The
spiritual importance, mm-hmm. right, because it probably wasn't much to look at in the 6th century.
Right.
Probably nothing at all, because it had been destroyed twice.
Right.
And rebuilt partially, really. So anyway, the map was truly amazing. I would really recommend to go and take a look, at least on Google or whatever your search engine is, and just take a look at that. One thing that struck me passing over into Jordan, even when you look at the satellite map, I had a big satellite map mm-hmm. with the Holy Land, with Israel, and then Jordan right next to it. And Jordan is red on satellite, all the Earth that has a very, very strong reddish tone to the Earth and to the mountains and to everything. So I thought that was fabulous because in the Bible, Edom means red. Esau means red. So Moab is the land of the red. But in fact, it is the land of the red. Because when you look at the satellite photo, it's red. I mean, you see Israel, you see Jordan, and the tip of Jordan going up into the midpoint of the state of Jordan is red. So the red mountains of Moab. That was really, that for me was a revelation because Edom, yes, I knew because it was reddish terrain, but this was truly, really cool. So Madaban, the Church of St. George, and then we went to Mount Nebo. Mount Nebo, of course, is a pretty high peak upon which Moses is said to have surveyed the Holy Land and to have died in sight of the Holy Land, but not having entered the Holy Land as chastisement from the Lord for his disobedience in one of the many confrontations that he had with the people of Israel in the desert. So Mount Nebo also has this little church, which is a very modern church, and we had mass there, and that was really cool. But then it you can really see, you can survey the mount, you can see the Holy Land. I mean, you can, from Mount Nebo, you can see all the hills, all the mountains, and all the Holy Land.
Well, it's like where Moses stood. He didn't enter the Holy Land, but he was there. And it's like when you look down upon this, you see the mountains on the other side in Israel, you see the Dead Sea, you can see other countries. I mean, on a clear day, it wasn't totally clear when we were there.
It wasn't.
There was kind of a haze, but it was amazing. And when you look at the Dead Sea, you can see all of it. And it's really the Dead Sea, as we've mentioned previously, it's much smaller than it was in those days. So you can just imagine there were, you know, you have the Dead Sea, you have the desert area, you have fertile areas, you've got the Jordan River. I mean, all this topography, and it's just immense sight that you can see.
We'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Hi, and welcome back. We are in Jordan right now, and we have just been to the Madaba Valley and examined the mosaics for you over the radio waves. And now we are at the sanctuary on the top of Mount Nebo, where we had a wonderful mass. We had a mass at all these places. And we examined the primitive sanctuary located on the top of Mount Nebo, which was thought to have been a classical building in antiquity that was then converted to Christianity in the 4th century. But the things, the most notable things, first of all, didn't we hear the story that the mosaics were covered over during that period?
Right.
Like they were in the 4th or 5th century, those beautiful floors and walls.
Well, they were being built over.
Were being built over, so they were preserved, because if not, during the iconoclastic heresy, all the people in this mosaic, which we are about to describe to you, would have been defaced.
Correct.
So,
and when you go in there and you look at these and you go into the church, they have these metal ramps. So you're walking on these ramps above all of this, so you can look down and see them. So it's really interesting.
These actually, and these mosaics are dated August 531. With the names of the Bishop of Madaba, the Abbot of the Monastery, and the name of the incumbent Roman consuls.
Amazing.
That's interesting, right? So there's the one I wanted to concentrate on was a tableau. It's like one, two, three, four lines of figures. And again, you should go back and take a look at the mosaic, just Google Mosaics Mount Nebo, and it's pretty amazing. The first line, basically, it was the calling card of the people of the region. The people of the region were telling you what they do.
Right.
You know, what they're famous for.
Right.
Right. So from the top, the first picture is young shepherds fighting off the assault of a lion. And lo and behold, you can really tell there's a lion. You can tell there's a zebu. I don't know what that is, but it's this zebra-looking thing that's
An animal
tethered to a tree. And a shield-bearing soldier wearing a Phrygian cap assaulting the lion. Right. So a Phrygian cap is something that we would all recognize if we had been around in the 5th and 6th century. But I think even today we'd recognize it. It's kind of like it's a slouchy little hat. The closest thing I can think of is Asterix's hat. Anybody follow the cartoon Asterix? It's a French cartoon. Anyway, Asterix, one of Asterix's cohorts is a Gaul, and he has a little Phrygian cap. And of course, we know there's a connection between Gaul and Galatians, right? So anyway, that's the first line. In the second tableau, there's two hunters on horseback. And so we see people on horseback with spears, accompanied by dogs that are spearing a bear and a wild boar. I thought that was interesting. The wild boar is almost bigger than the bear in here. But the colors are just beautiful.
Beautiful. It's like it was done yesterday. I mean, it's not like you're looking at something that doesn't have any color or anything to it.
It's pretty vibrant. In the third line, the shepherd sits on a rock beneath a tree, hanging out with the sheep and the goat. Our guide told us that each tree is supposed to represent one of the crops mm-hmm. that they were famous for. So in a way, it was their calling card. It was like an advertisement,
right?
For the people up there. And then finally, in the last tableau, there is a person from Africa, obviously with dark skin, holding an ostrich on a kind of leash. So that meant probably were exotic, while a camel and a zebra, also exotic probably, mm-hmm. both harnessed, are led by a boy dressed in a cap and mantle. So I thought that was kind of cool. They're kind of static. Even the ones on horseback are kind of, you know, you can see the influence of the Byzantine art is coming in, right? Everything is reduced to a few essential shades of color, which was provided by local materials. It could have been a whole lot more vibrant.
Right.
It's kind of muted when you see it, right? Anyway, I thought it was just absolutely spectacular.
Well, then there were areas where they had baptisms mm-hmm. Down below. You can see that.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, there's layers because of the other mosaics were done later on, and mm-hmm. they're at a different level.
Mm-hmm.
And they even... They move them intact and put them on the sides of the mm-hmm. of the building mm-hmm. inside. So you're just surrounded by all of this. And when you look down and the floors are open because you're on these ramps, you're looking down at the oldest ones. It's really a most unique place and a wonderful place to have mass.
Mm-hmm. I am looking in this little guidebook. You have the Mesha stone, which we know, those of us who study the scriptures, talks about Mesha, king of Moab, capturing the town of Nebo from the king of Israel. And that's how the mountain of Nebo became part of the patrimony of Moab that then became Jordan. But, of course, we know that the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan did not take over until the Brits put them in place, the British forces put them in place.
After World War One,
after, you know, in the 20s. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a pretty – Jordan itself is a construct, really. It was drawn at mm-hmm. a table by some by the British Empire, basically.
Yes, right? As many of those countries were.
They divided mm-hmm. up the Holy Land. I mean, you know, Jordan. So we did Mount Nebo, and then finally we're going to go to the Pièce de Résistance. First of all, Mount Nebo is 800 meters above sea level, but it seems even taller when you're approaching it from below sea level, which is
right.
most of that area is, right?
Right. Because you're coming from that Dead Sea area all the way up. So it's it is a great distance.
Yeah.
And as I say, the views are breathtaking.
The views are breathtaking. You know, it is pretty amazing. This mosaic was pretty amazing, the one of the tears. All right. Then I'm looking on my phone. I've got the famous views of the mountains mm-hmm. from Mount Nebo. And from the next day, of course, we got up, and it was our big day to have our visit to Petra. So Petra is also – it's called the Rose Red City, which if you know anything about what we just said about Jordan and Moab, you know, there's no question that that is the same kind of red sandstone that is described in the Bible when it speaks about Edom and Moab. It's quite a long hike into Petra. They take you in to where you can park your car or your bus, but then after that, you have to hoof it.
You have to
walk on foot. Is it 5 miles in?
It's two and a half out.
Yeah.
But if you can't walk, they have these little carts with single horses that you can ride in. And we had a couple people use that.
That's right. It's
just a riot to watch these things come and go. They even had some camels.
Mm-hmm.
They even had some horses if you wanted to go in on horseback. So there's a variety of ways to do it. But, of course, we were walking with our guides so we could stop and see all the sights mm-hmm. and as we walked in.
So it was pretty cool. Petra is about 300 kilometers from the city of Amman. Now, Amman is the capital of Jordan. But what I wanted to point out is if you ever study King David conquers the city of Amman
mm-hmm.
in the Bible.
Right.
So it's a very ancient city. The ancient Semitic name for the Nabatean city was Rechem, which means rock, mm-hmm. which the Greeks promptly translated into Petra. And let me just say also this. As a student of art history, when I approached the Nabataeans' famous fabled, you know, I thought I was going to see some original stuff. And in fact, it wasn't. It was all Hellenistic. It was uh-huh. all derivative Greek architecture, classical Greek architecture with the tympanus and the columns and the friezes and the capitals. But it wasn't anything groundbreaking other than the fact that it was carved out of solid rock, right? So I guess I was a little disappointed.
But still, the setting, the way it's kind of hidden away and the way that you approach it is so unusual, and that this, you know, this, the Nabataeans, which was, I guess, a big trading nation, and the people coming in with their camels and everything would stop there on their way into other areas to trade, was like a Mecca at that point in time.
I like how the Greek name is Petra. The Arabic name is Wadi Musa, which means River of Moses. It says this area was known by nomadic groups in the Paleolithic times, 11th millennium BC. The first settlements date back to the Neolithic age, which is 8th millennium. So 8,000 BC. And there's evidence of extensive agriculture and pastoral activity. There's basically there's a lot of nomadic stuff going on, but no right. building. Okay. The settlements that we're going to talk about don't really emerge until, let's see. Yeah. I mean, it's not really until I think of the first century BC that we see. Yeah, the prosperity of the Nabataean kingdom
was the first and second century
reached its peak mm-hmm. under Aretas the Fourth, 98 BC, AD 40, contemporary of the Emperor Augustus in Rome. So that's probably where most of the buildings
are. This was kind of an oasis in the desert, though, mm-hmm. because they were surrounded by desert, but yet the way the city was constructed and the way they handled their water system, they were able to have a large group of people living there, being able to grow crops and survive and
a massive
build.
Feat of hydraulic engineering was also carried out around the city with the carving of channels out of the rock and the construction of earthenware pipes, dams, and cisterns for the collection of water, which we saw.
We did.
That was so cool.
It was.
Because we saw these pipes. I mean, there's like they're channeled into the rock going all the way. So when you come in, as you approach your 2.5 miles, you go through narrow channels called the Sikh, S-I-Q. Mm-hmm. And the important thing to know is that they're peppered with tombs because the Nabataeans believed that the better looking your tomb, the more important you were in life. Mm-hmm. So you could have maybe a modest home, but you had to have sort of a very, very mm-hmm. fancy tomb. Mm-hmm. You know, so we saw that also with...
And the number of pillars that they have were the number of people that were buried there. Mm-hmm. And I know the one as we went in had four pillars, and then there was a carve out with a man, so that there were five in there. Mm-hmm. And I think that they questioned whether the families would go and visit mm-hmm. the tombs later on. You know how when we would go to the catacombs, how that was a custom mm-hmm. for people to go on the anniversary of people's deaths or something to, you know, eat there or something. There were other rooms in there, so there mm-hmm. there may have been banquets and different things held there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty interesting. Our time is running away. We're probably going to have to finish Petra on the last show that we do on this trip. But we would advise you, if you can, if you hear us talking about these things, you need to visualize them if you've never been. So go online and Google or research Petra and Madaba Valley and Mount Nebo and kind of see also specifically the colors of the mosaics and the subjects and the beauty, the sheer beauty of Petra, the rose red city carved out of the rock. Truly a lifetime experience. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.